Today's program is brought to you by Forever Cheese, masters of the Mediterranean. For more information, visit forevercheese.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome to Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live on the Heritage Radio Network. This is Greg Blaze. On the line, I have the illustrious Carolyn Hostetler, owner and founder of Quality Cheese and the Adopt an Alp program. How are you, Carolyn? How's it going down there in Florida?
It's going very well. Hi, Greg.
It's always nice to talk to you. I feel like I never get to talk to you enough in life. I'm really appreciative of you coming on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's chat.
I'd like to do that. We're going to do that. So today's episode is all about transhumans. We're calling it traditions/transhumans because the two are inextricably linked, particularly in Switzerland, where Carolyn hails from. Before we get into what transhumans means, I was wondering if perhaps you could give us a little history and biography of your company, Quality Cheese.
Well, Quality Cheese was born basically out of a lack of good cheese, where I ended up living 18 years ago in Florida. That landscape was like a desert when it came to cheese. And I was talking to my friend, cheese affineur Rolf Baylor, on the phone and complaining what I cheese-wise. And I made a little joke telling him, well, maybe I need to start importing your cheeses. And somehow this might have stuck in my mind. Anyways, a year later, I did a trip through 5 cities in the U.S. and I showed the most important chefs 3 different cheeses from Switzerland. It was the Sprint, the Gruyere from Rolf Baylor, and an Emmentaler.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning.
That's amazing. I mean, that Baylor stuff, I know it's like sort of changed the landscape of how I viewed mountain cheese, Swiss, you know, cheeses from Switzerland, and it still does. I mean, I still say pound for pound, I've never sold better Gruyere than the Rolf Baylor Gruyere, and you know, and I really think it's kind of, it's still, other than you, is it still fairly desert-like in terms of that sort of cheese down in Florida? What's going on down there for cheese besides?
Well, you know, it's getting better step by step, but it's really slow. It's very slow. The fact that people nowadays like to do cruises, and that Florida has a lot of those people who are snowbirds and who live other places year-round, that they are exposed to better cheeses than the regular blocks that they are used to from the supermarket, that helps. I hear a lot of people coming back from a cruise to Europe, and they have cheeses every day for dessert, and so now they know what's around, and they have the internet to check it, so they want now the good stuff. You don't give somebody something better and he goes back to the lower level. You always go up. It's hard to go backwards, so that helps.
I agree. And once I get people hooked on the good cheese that I sell them at the counter, they come back and yell at me because I make them spend lots of money on good tasting cheese, which I really like to do to people. I was wondering, maybe you could explain, you know, the name Rolf Baylor and the man Rolf Baylor are kind of mythical in cheese lore still, especially for me. And so when you say you brought in cheeses from Rolf, maybe you can, and you could explain to us who he is exactly. What's his deal?
Yeah. So Rolf Baylor, he came to cheese by the love for cheese, like many of us have done the same path. He is a person who was the first known affineur in Switzerland. He has been in that business for now about 35 years. And Rolf Baylor is a very open-minded, a very progressive man. And when it comes to cheese, a very, very strong and convinced traditionalist. So he is a purist. to the deepest. He wants to protect all traditions. He does not like trends in cheeses or added flavors. He is a big, big fighter for raw milk and raw milk products and the free people's free choice when it comes to those questions. Rolf Behler, he has been called the Pope of cheeses in Switzerland. Yeah. And he always splits opinions. He is he loves to talk. He talks very well. And he does not try to hide or to be very, conscious. He just says what he thinks, and he has strong opinions. And doing this throughout all those years, he has done a lot for Swiss cheese. He has had that voice, and he steps in for cheese, for the farmers, for better wages, for better milk prices, all of this. So he's a very important leader when it comes to cheese, not only in Switzerland, but within Europe.
He's definitely a polarizing figure in terms of, he definitely is. I mean, I read some things that he said that I agree with, and I like people who put it out there like that. How did you come to meet him? Was it the fact that he was such a purist? Was that what you were drawn towards him?
No, actually, I used to be a food journalist back in Switzerland. I met Rolf through an assignment. I had to write a portrait on him. And we became friends. We clicked immediately. We had the same, you know, ideas of food and cooking and lifestyles and people in general and society and that cows should have their horns left, etc. So we became friends, and I helped him at markets or events or tastings when he needed people, and we stayed friends and got closer and closer, and his cheeses are fantastic. I mean, when I started that business, there was no question what I would bring in and start with.
Yeah, that Gruyere is tremendous. Now, he's a guy, you know, he's an affiner, and most of our guests know the affiner is the maturer. So he has specific relationships with very specific producers. I have no idea who his producers are after all of these years. I imagine he guards that pretty close. But does he work with the same people, really, just over and over again?
Yes.
That's great. So he's like his model is like the Neil's Yard dairy model almost. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Like, so he it's goes
basically this. He does work very, very closely with cheesemakers. By now, after all these years, he says, you know, I'm almost able to make a cheese. And what he likes is the creative part in a cheese. To work with a cheesemaker that translates basically his ideas. And he does not do a big deal or a big fuss of who those cheesemakers are.
He's
very open with that. But he loves to work with people that are loyal, of course, and that he knows, okay, if he starts a relationship and a business relationship with me, he will continue with me, and we can build something over time, slowly, but with a good foundation. So that's his approach. And there have been people who just didn't work out for him, or he didn't work out for them, maybe, and then they split, because to him, this relationship in order to create great, great cheeses is something very, very important. And the human relationship between the cheesemaker and the affiner, who also often is the one who has an idea or an ideal on his mind.
Certainly.
And that he then looks for the right person to translate this into a cheese. It's very unique, very special.
That's brilliant. I mean, and would you say that that's part of the reason why? I mean, you are an amazing cheese person, amazing. So would you say that you were inspired a lot by your relationship with him in the beginning to become what you are? Because you branched out a lot. You also work, Rolf, I believe in my knowing of you, that was the beginning of how I knew you. And the beginning of your program, but now you work with Willie Schmidt, correct? I mean, who's a cheese maker? He's like the first generation cheese maker, but like a fourth generation dairy guy, right? And like, so you get with him, and now you have your own. You work with some of your own producers as well, correct?
Yeah. And the reason is just, you know, when I look, I started out with nothing but Rolf Behler's selections, and over time, you know, you see by going back to Switzerland, looking at this cheese landscape, there's so much just great, great cheese
amazing.
Out there in
amazing
Switzerland.
Stuff.
And yes, and you have all the classics, the traditionals from Switzerland, you know, all the name protected cheeses, Emmental and so on. But then since about 2000, you also have those little specialties and novelties that emerge. And it's so, so fascinating. So I decided over time, I don't want to leave them out. I don't want to ignore them. I want to take them on and show them to the people here. And, you know, it's hard. What I hear a lot is that my product list is way too long. But, you know,
who would say such a thing?
Cheese on there has a reason to be there and has a story. So it's very hard for me to shorten my list because I don't take on a little baby and then I kick it out of the house.
Oh, that's
you know?
Mean. So. No, absolutely. So I would say, like the Pope of cheese, converted you. You are now like a cardinal, or also you're like a Pope of cheese too. I like that. That's fantastic.
I don't know if I'm a Pope. I'm no angel. I know that.
I like that. That's cool. I love Swiss dairy, Swiss cheese. I love mountain cheese, and I love the cheeses. As you say by Behler, they always have a particular flavor. You can see his influence on the cheese because he cures it to get to just that spot. Like, you know, some of those cheeses are they're super savory. I love like the Toggenburger, one of my favorite Alpine cheeses of all time, and that Gruyere, and they are really consistent in their flavor profiles, you know, even when you get things that are from different seasons. And maybe that's a good transition for us to talk about one of the most important parts of mountain cheese making, which is the process of transhumance. So I'm gonna take a short break here, and then when we come back, we're going to get into that process. So stay with us.
Today's program was brought to you by Forever Cheese, Masters of the Mediterranean. Forever Cheese is dedicated to sourcing the absolute best and most authentic products from Italy, Spain, Portugal, and Croatia. They started out with just one cheese, then four, and never knew that they would have the breadth of product and the richness of working with so many fantastic producers across the Mediterranean. Michelle Buster and Pier Luigi Cini have this singular vision to be the best they could be and bring products never before seen to the U.S. They were sure that with education and sampling, there was a market for such a myriad of handcrafted traditional and non-cheeses and specialty foods. Pier Luigi comes from a family of cheesemakers, and after teaching Michelle all he knew, together they set out one day at a time to make a difference not only in their country, but in the lives of each of their producers. For more information, visit forevercheese.com.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. We have Carolyn Hostetler on the line, who is telling us about her awesome company, Quality Cheese, and its roots, and Rolf Behler, and a whole bunch of wonderful cheesy-related items and things and topics. Caroline is also the founder of the Adopt and Adopt. Adopt an Alp program. It's the end of the day, man. I mean, like, I'm like, wow. I'm like a little tongue-tied. The founder of the Adopt an Alp program, which supports transhumans. For those of you that don't know what this word means, Carolyn, can you tell us a bit more about the definition of transhumans? And perhaps beyond the definition, like, what does it mean for the folks who still practice this centuries-old tradition?
Yeah. Basically, transhumans means the moving of people with their animals according to the seasons. That's what it means. In order to take advantage of all the different seasons have to give nature-wise. So in Switzerland, in all your alpine countries, this means that throughout the summer months, farmers will move up their herds of animals to the Alps and make cheese there, take advantage of the harvest of this wonderful, healthy, rich milk that those cows have in the summer, and then descend again at the end of the summer in the fall.
So why should people, and I know this is an odd question, but I really big, why should people care about transhumans here and like as it goes on in Switzerland? You know, what does it mean for us here in the United States?
Well, first and foremost, transhumans is a deep, deep, very old tradition within all European alpine countries of Europe. So French do the same, Italians do the same, Germans, Austrians, everywhere where there's Alps. The Alp cheeses, and please note, say Alp cheeses, these are the only ones that are made seasonally and made right there where the animals graze
right.
And live and the farmer lives. So there's no Alpine or Alpine Stein cheese. They're Alp cheese. That's
right.
Important. but those cheeses, by now we know that they are the most healthy cheeses ever made. No other cheese is called officially functional food, and Alp cheese is by now. It's the same as with the olive oil. We speak of the Alp paradox in accordance to that famous French paradox. So these cheeses have enormous potential. Health-wise, these are facts now. There's thousands of studies by now since the year about 2004. On the other hand, they're very, very flavorful. For us cheese lovers, they are very, very interesting because they change. They're never the same summer after summer. They will be different. They are a gift to all of us.
That's awesome.
Also, transhumance is a form and a way of keeping the meadows healthy,
right.
Taking care of the meadows, keeping the society and the lifestyles in old-fashioned European countries like, I say old-fashioned, Switzerland alive. It's a healthy society. A society wants to or has to work together, is able to work together, is able to take lack and just make something out of this. So transhumans basically has two targets. For over here is that we want to show people how important it is to support those farmers actively, not
Certainly.
Just with saying, oh yeah, your cheeses are great, but you know, a bit expensive. We have to be able to get a realistic life and realistic idea and picture of life on an Alp. Most
great.
People over here, I realized over time, they have no idea what that life up there is. They might imagine a farm family sits outside their beautiful little chalet and drinks chocolate milk out of those little bowls that we always see in
Isn't
in
that
films,
what they just do?
Movies.
Don't they just sit up there and do that all the time? I thought that was life, you know?
So, you know, that life up there is more characterized by things that are not around, that we take for granted. Like, not every hut has running water
sure.
or electricity.
Yeah.
The dairies up there are, you know, very simple. There's not everything around. You just have to make with what you have.
Certainly. And
it's not It's not about drawing a bad picture. It's just about giving people an idea on how it is, and also to justify, you know, that an Alp cheese, yes, it will cost more than something that you can just with the click of a button shoot out of a machine.
Because
this is grown and it's handmade, and it has a reason to.
Certainly. So, yeah, I think you said a couple things there that I really want to highlight that I agree with. Living by the seasons is super important. It's something that I feel like society has gone away from. Everything, food is available at every season, produce available at every season. When I grew up, we had four clear seasons. I always mentioned I'm a New Englander. I love that. We had fall, winter, spring, and summer. We did specific things during all of those specific seasons. And I feel like that kept life in order. People knew what to expect. So I understand about supporting a way of life. I also I read on your website, on your Adopt an Alp website, and your blog, you have all of these beautiful vignettes about the process of transhumans and living up there on those Alps, which is fantastic. I encourage anybody to check out the Adopt an Alp website and to read those vignettes. It's dangerous up there. I read a great one about how vertical those pastures are, and I experienced that a little bit when I traveled to the Alto Adige, and I hiked up to this farm that had these like vertical pastures these cows were on, and the guy was telling me that they sometimes lose people because the tractor like rolls all the way down like thousands of meters. I mean, that happens up there as well, correct? I mean, that's like a reality of life living up there on the top of the mountain.
Yeah, it does. Like, we had the case last year where you know, for those blogs, I keep in touch with those farmers that go up there and talk with them like every week or bi-weekly to be able to write a post and give updates and news and et cetera. And last year I called one and said, well, so how are things? And he said, well, had you called me yesterday, I would have summer, but we lost a cow last night.
Oh.
The cow had fallen asleep on the cliff and just rolled down and fell to death, literally. And it was a tragedy for that whole environment, the whole team up there. Life can be dangerous up there. There's something called the wild hay man.
Uh-huh.
They take the job to go and cut grass for the winter in order to have enough hay on all those edges that are extremely dangerous.
And they have to
tie up, and it's crazy when you see the pictures. Yeah.
That, so maybe you could just to back up a tiny bit, just so our listeners know, what is the Adopt an Alp program, and how does it, and it ties into transhumans, it ties into this process of taking the animals up and making cheese out of the summer grasses and then clearing and cleaning the meadows. Talk to me about Adopt an Alp for a second.
Adopt an Alp is a program. It's in its third year this year, and it's a program that is offered by Mifroma here in the U.S. It's guided towards cheese stores, specialty stores, stores that have a specific role in when it comes to high-end food and of educating people in food. So basically, what we offer is a network of many, many Alps in Switzerland, and we have a map, and you can see where this Alp is. We have profiles on the website on each Alp, the family that goes up there, or the co-op that goes up there, however they are organized, what animals they bring, what cheeses they make, and so on. The customer can pick his Alp, adopt his Alp, and with doing this, the store will commit to take a certain amount of that cheese from that Alp.
Right.
And then throughout the whole summer, the idea it really is to communicate that program to the end consumers, so to the customers that enter the store. And this is very important in our opinion, because we want to teach people about that life on the Alps and communicate and share with them how important it is for both sides. Americans here have the opportunity to get unbelievable cheese.
Certainly.
That without this program would never make it across that big pond. And on the other hand, we want to show the Swiss people who still go up on the Alp and take that burden and keep that traditional life, that their work is worth it.
That's
every
really great.
Single minute. And that people across the world in America support it and appreciate it. That is the whole idea.
That's a fantastic mission. Can you answer me a question? What percentage, I mean, is that, and this might be a foolish question, but I'm asking anyway. I mean, what percentage of these guys are still practicing this tradition? You know, I mean, is it in danger of sort of going away?
Yes, it is. In the latest numbers we have is that in the year 2013, there were still 7,200 Alps.
That's a lot of Alps.
Populated, and where cheese was made at. There were 13,000 people working on Alps in the summer, so doing transhumance up there. But the tendency is sinking. It's decreasing every single year.
Right.
The very good news is that the demand for Alp cheese since about 2000, the year 2000, is increasing. So people are getting aware that, you know, this is a product that's very unique and very precious.
Yeah, people love Alpine cheese. They love it. They love it more and more all the time now. Anyway, I'm sorry. Please go on.
No, that's fine. The thing is, you know, also when I say it's important to support those farmers and those families actively, that is a thing you have to imagine. Many generations have been up there, and usually the huts on an Alp are just left to the next generation, and they just move on and on. So every few generations, houses are built differently over there, and
sure,
they last for a few generations. So every few generations, somebody will have to make a decision, okay, we need a new roof, or we need a new
right. This
or that, or the barn, or whatever. And, you know, these people, they do their job, they work hard, they sleep, they get their rest, they are ready for work again. At the end of the day, they can pay their bills. It's not more what they make up there.
Yeah.
They don't become millionaires on an Alp.
No.
So by supporting these people and showing them we want that cheese, we might be able to motivate them to say, yes, let's renovate that house. We need a new house, and we want to go on. We don't want to lose families.
No.
Like it happened to me this spring. I called one family from last year, say, are you on board again? And she said, I'm sorry, we had to give up. You know, we just couldn't renovate the house. We didn't make any money. It's just safer for us and more predictable if we just sell the milk throughout the year to a big company.
Right.
That's sad.
That's brutal.
That is very, very sad. And
it totally
we can.
Is.
Every one of us here, by buying this cheese, can support that tradition.
I like that. And so it's kind of like, it seems to me like the huts are sort of like, and forgive me for saying this, but it's kind of like a hunting lodge. I mean, different people can use it, but they're owned by a particular family, and then they renovate it when they need to. Like you said, so generationally it might fall out because a certain generation will decide, this isn't worth it for me anymore, you know? And then
Yeah.
And they probably don't get any cable TV up there either or anything like that, you know what I mean? It doesn't seem like the lap of luxury, but it sounds like pretty cool work to me, at least in my hours where I think I'm, like, being driven crazy by city life. You know, you're like, this isn't a good life, and I'm like, Wow.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be bad. Lack of people, nice grasses up there, some animals, but I'm sure it's backbreaking work, you know?
It is, and that's exactly it, you know? And there's huts that are very modern and new and that are very, you know, light and big windows. And then there's the old huts that are dark and that are one room and you sleep and make cheese and cook and eat in all that one same room. And there's everything in between, you know. It's the same with life on the Alps, how it's organized. There's so many different forms and styles. Some people go up as a family. Some hire employees that they send up with their cows. Some function as a co-op. So there's many, many different regional, mostly, varieties and versions of those varieties. So it's very interesting, and that's what is so so enriching about the blog, is that these people tell about their life. And, in the midst of the summer, it's sometimes getting difficult when people are tired already, still have to work like 15, 16-hour days.
That's a
long
day.
As you said, it's hard work. It's not sitting at a desk and checking your iPhone, you know?
No. So, no, it is not.
So
I mean, just getting those animals up there. I mean, just getting them to the meadow is like, you know, I mean, like, I work in a very busy place, lots and lots of people. I try to herd them into specific areas to keep them away from me. I can think of getting all those guys up there. And then as soon as you get them up there, then you got to immediately start getting the milk out of them, right? I mean, they clean up the meadow, you get the milk out of them, you start making cheese.
Yep.
And immediately you probably have to start thinking about, oh, great, I got to get these things down again. You know, like, how am I going to get them down again? Or maybe they like it. I don't know. But I mean, maybe the animals like the journey at some level. I'm not sure.
You know, actually, the ones that farmers tell you, the one animals that have been up to an Alp, they feel they become nervous and wild and anxious in the spring, and they instinctively know that they will go up again. And the oldest ones are the fastest ones on going up.
That's
and
cool.
Doing that walk, that hike up there.
That's
it's
cool.
Really, it's super fascinating. It's something that's deep, you know, rooted.
That's great.
And it's really cool.
I like those elements. I've never done that. I really want to walk with some group of animals, you know what I mean? Maybe some smaller animals like sheep or something like that. I don't know, but I'd really love to go through that process. I know you said something else really was interesting to me, and that I think about all the time, you know, the demand for Alp cheese or Alpine style cheese here is very high. A lot of people are making Alpine cheese, and a lot of people are eating it. I know it's special to me, but why do you think that is? Is it all of these things? Is it the tradition? Is it the flavor, which I find like super approachable, like really deep, and the texture? I mean, I love Alpine cheese. I love everything about it. So maybe you can give me your take on why you think the demand has gone up.
Well, I think we have done a lot of education in the past years and shown, you know, pictures and told stories and shown traditions. And I think this does have an impact on the consumer, because they can see that this has a wide, important, very serious background. On the other hand, I believe by listening to comments and feedbacks and all of this from cheese eaters and cheese lovers, that Americans seem to have a knack for, when they hear Alp or mountain and they think of Europe, Switzerland maybe in also specifically, that they imagine a combination of something very rustic flavor-wise.
Sure.
So a good little kick in the end, some crunches in the texture, combined with a big, rich creaminess. And I think that's exactly what a well-made Alp cheese can offer you.
And it lasts forever. Like, it just lasts forever, in my opinion. It's just like the – it's the model – To me, I love mountain cheese so much because it's so much perseveres, you know? And unfortunately, I say this because, you know, it can be abused, can be banged around. It can sit in places maybe it's not supposed to, but it's like still, yeah, it's still there for you. And it's still pretty good, yeah, no matter how you treat it.
It's always good. Yeah. And see, that was honestly how I, two reasons how I got this idea of Adopt an Alp, or it came to me almost, this idea. One is I love to eat Alp cheese. This is probably a love child of mine.
I just love
to eat Alp cheese. And I love to listen to stories. I love to look at those pictures, those
right,
mountains. I love that whole tradition. And I want with every pore of myself to save it and to give it the best I can. And the other thing is that I realized that people, this word alpine gets abused so badly. You can go Google and you will find life insurances. You will find peace. You will find everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, alpine, I did ponder a little bit on that. And I found, you know, alpine people, it gives them a feeling of health, pureness,
yeah,
cleanliness, safety maybe. It has something very honest to it. And I want to explain to people the real life on those Alps and the real value of those cheeses, and not have them pink glasses on right side of everything, or do a terrible thing and say, oh, that these are poor people. No, they're people who go and do something that their great-grandfathers did, and they know why they do it and how they do it, and that they do it right.
Yeah.
So it's about really giving people a realistic picture, an idea, and not, you know, if somebody comes and say, oh, this is an alpine cheese, it's really cool. And then you see it's made year-round. It's made down
right,
in a valley where a mountain is even far away. That has nothing to do with
right,
Alp cheese, you know?
And yeah,
we work with the Swiss government in this regard, because even within Europe, it's a big problem that people
sure,
mix up those terms and those
it happens everywhere.
Words between mountain and Alp and alpine style. Because Alp cheese is more expensive, of
it
course,
is,
than any other cheese.
Well, the processes
are
there.
If you need a helicopter that brings
right,
you clothes and food once a week,
right,
then, you know, it's probably an environment that's harder to work in than when you can ride the bus right to your dairy and then back again in the evening.
Yeah.
So we have to make everything clear why it is more healthy, why it is more expensive, why it is important to be saved.
That's brilliant.
That's what it's all about.
Well, that's fantastic. Thanks so much. You know, the process of transhumance is super cool. I encourage everyone to really, you know, check out the Adopt an Alp program and get involved, because it is. It's totally worth it. And Alp cheese is some of my favorite cheese. I got to stop misusing those words as well. Carolyn, thank you so much for coming
on. Thank you,
Greg. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Stay tuned. We'll be back next week with more cheesy good stuff. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.